This is Ashley Bond, Miss Illinois USA 2009 and a member of the Chicago Lovables. And you're listening to Fred and Mark on the Chicago Bullseye.
What's going on? This is Joakim Noah of the Chicago Bulls, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
I'm not here around this week. Now, you may be, but I'm not.
You hungry?
Hey, Ma! We get some meatloaf!
You don't think this is the greatest? I will fight you. That's no lie.
Can you clap for the killers?
All right, let's rock.
Give it up for them gangsters.
Throw them off that.
One time for the killers.
Whoa.
Double up for them gangsters.
Just living the dream.
Hi, I'm Bill White, and welcome to Chicago Bullseye.
I gotta be honest, I come in, it's like a little, like, I'm trying to get my bearings, there's cartoons, your mom, and it's like, you still got it. It's living the dream, I love that.
Hello, Bulls fans, and welcome to a special Thanksgiving Day episode of the Chicago Bullseye. This is special for many reasons, not just because it's the Thanksgiving Day episode, but because it's actually our first broadcast episode of the season. As we are recording this, we don't even know for sure if this will be our first broadcast episode of the season. We have done episodes so far, and we're having issues with GoDaddy. I feel we owe you all an explanation. So the shows weren't able to get up, and then when it seems that we figured things out, the shows were kind of irrelevant by that point, so we just didn't post them. But we'll keep those in the uncovered archives for later use. But, however, hopefully if you guys are hearing this right now, that means that we're back online. We got GoDaddy working again. We're back on the air. So happy 2015-16 NBA season, Fred. How are you doing?
Oh, living the dream. Living the dream, Mark. I'm so excited. One of my favorite holidays of all time, Thanksgiving. Just a scant day away. Cannot wait. What's your go-to on Thanksgiving? You got anything special planned? What's your game plan?
I'm gonna go to my cousin's house. Gonna go see the grandma, the cousins, the fam. You know, Thanksgiving, being a Jew, Thanksgiving is probably my favorite holiday because I don't get Christmas like all you people do. It gets ripped away from me and it gets thrown in my face every year. It makes me a little bitter. It's okay. I'm just a lonely Jew on Christmas. But Thanksgiving's probably the best holiday. But my issue with Thanksgiving is that, why do we have to have, like, a pre-made menu? Like, why do we have to have certain foods that we have to eat on Thanksgiving? Because if it was open to me, there's 10 Thanksgiving items that I would just take right off the list and replace them with something else, such as turkey, first of all. We start with the turkey. We start having steak, like we should have on Thanksgiving. We get rid of other things, too, like cranberry sauce and mashed potatoes and shit like that. We don't need that stuff. Too many carbs.
Well, you know what? I have the greatest plan right now. Well, it's been taken away from me, unfortunately, this year. Last year we had Mexican Thanksgiving. My sister-in-law is Mexican, and she made probably one of the greatest meals I've ever had in my life. Top three, just the fixings of every kind of Mexican dish that you can imagine. Tacos. It was homemade guac. It was beyond belief. I then traveled to my parents' house on the south side and enjoy the standard Thanksgiving. I swear, by that evening, I was pretty much, you know, it was like a haze that it took me a good 7-8 hours to get over. It was just on a food coma high for the longest one I've ever had. This year, unfortunately, my wife's family decided to go back standard, so we're back to standard, and the Mexican Thanksgiving has been taken away from me. So now I've got two versions of just the same thing, which is all good. I mean, I can't complain. We eat at noon, and then, you know, 5 o'clock with my parents' side. So it's going to just be. There's nothing better than this day, though. You get football, three games, good, decent games to watch. I get a chance to get caught up on the NBA, watch all the games that I miss, get caught up on all the information, you know, with the latest who's doing well, Porzingis. I'm really going to spend some time in, looking at Porzingis and some of the other exciting new players in the NBA. It's just going to be a great day. Thanksgiving, indeed. Number one, though, let's thank all our listeners who actually listen. Let's thank them who listen to this Bullseye for the last, 8 years that we've been doing it, without whom it would not have been. So I digress.
Absolutely.
I think we've talked enough about food, and let's talk about the beloved Bull. Big win last night against the Blazers.
Can we talk real quick, though, about the NBA real fast? Just the NBA in general. So many surprises this year, in my opinion. Up to this point, I got to say, the best thing about the NBA season so far for me, Fred, has been getting NBA League Pass. And NBA League Pass is amazing. A, I don't have to listen to Stacey and Neil. I can listen to the other people. The last thing I'll say, whoever does this in Portland, I think that they took some NyQuil prior to doing the podcast, their broadcast. It was the most boring broadcast I've ever seen in my life, so I went back to Stacey and Neil, but that's rare. But the best part about it is that instead of commercials, during commercial breaks, they show stats. So, like, they're just showing stats of all the teams in the NBA and all the various stats across the board. So I've never felt so in tune with everything that's going on, especially whatever we are right now, about 15 games into the season, something in that range. I've never felt so in tune, and it's all because of NBA League Pass. It's beautiful. I've been able to watch random teams I never watched before, but how about the East, man? Like, all of a sudden, the West is not the dominant conference anymore. All of a sudden, so if you look at any power rankings right now, generally 6 out of the top 10 teams are in the East. The top 3 teams in the league are in the West, but besides that, our back five is much more powerful than the West back five at the moment. And it seems like we've got more depth in the East from top to bottom in terms of the top being good all the way to the bottom. That's what I looked like 2 days ago. The worst team in the East right now, as the playoffs started today, was 2 games over 500. You had a team in the West that was 1 game under 500, and you had like 4 teams that were 500. You've got a huge gap in the West right now between talent. You've seen a lot of teams drop, one of them being the team we played last night, but Portland, Houston, what a shocker how bad they've been.
I know.
And the fact that they fired their coach, they still suck. Frickin', who else? The New Orleans Pelicans being so terrible so far. Oklahoma City really not being that great, even though Durant's played most of the games. They haven't really been that great. You really got, right now in the West, it's the Golden State Warriors and everybody else, but I'll put the Spurs in that category of maybe they're contenders at the moment. But once you get past the Spurs, man, there's nobody in the West. Maybe the Clippers.
Well, I disagree with that. I still think overall West Conference is better. I did predict the Eastern Conference would be better. That's why I had the Bulls win total at 48, slightly worse than last year. It wasn't because I didn't think the team was better. It wasn't because I didn't think the team is better coached. The Bulls are better coached. It's because the East is clearly better. And the only teams, if you look at the 76ers, are a tire fire, and the Nets are much worse. But every other team outside the Nets and 76ers, the Magic are 6-8. Clearly better, clearly more competitive, and you go up from there. So, I mean, we're talking about almost the entire conference at 500 or better, and, you know, the Bulls are right up near the top with tied with the Heat at 9-4. Overall, the conference as a whole is better. That's the only reason I said the Bulls win 48, and I still think it's possible that the Bulls could go into the playoffs rolling and being a much better team than they were last year, which is just the idea that the team is more healthy. Western Conference, there is some, you know, obviously some surprises with the Rockets not being good, but big picture, I still think overall as a conference, the West is better than the East. I think a team like the Rockets, talent-wise, is more talented than the vast majority of teams in the East. And I think if you pick them up and drop them in the East, they'd be a playoff team. And right now at 5-9, they may be struggling to get there. But to me, I really enjoyed this season just by watching the entire L.A. Laker fan base just be hit with the realization that Kobe Bryant, once and for all, is not better than Michael Jordan. I hope this realizes it. If you look at Jordan's stats as a 41-year-old, they're pretty amazing. As a 40 and 41-year-old, they're pretty amazing. Right now, Kobe Bryant's shooting 31% from the field and 19% from three. And
is that including yesterday? Because yesterday he was 1-for-14.
I'm not sure. He was? Oh, my gosh. He 1-for-14 yesterday. I didn't see that.
The worst shooting performance of his career in any game where he took more than 4 shots, which is like almost every game. But
Well, he was 6-for-24 in a game 7, which I still love to go back to. And they won the game despite his better effort. He's definitely a top 15 all-time, all right? I'm not trying to diminish his greatness as a player, but he's nowhere near Jordan. I'm so sick of speaking with Laker fans who want to make that argument. That argument is done. The guy is embarrassing himself now as a basketball player. He embarrassed himself, you know, for the last 3 years and injured.
Yeah, that's season. What the difference is, Fred. For the last 3 years, first of all, any player's career, it matters from top to bottom. Every year you play, it matters. I mean, we look at Robert Parrish. Is that year that he played in Chicago, did it count? Yeah. But the fact is that if you're able to get out and have one season where you're really stuck and then you leave, fine. Kobe Bryant has stuck for 3 years. And the problem is that he doesn't realize it yet. So he's putting the team, he's shooting the ball as if he's still the old Kobe Bryant, you know, going 7-for-28 sometimes. I mean, he's had nights where he shot the ball quite a bit. I think his confidence at this point is really out there. But I loved his comments after the game last night that it wouldn't matter at all. If he was averaging 35 points a game this year, they may have won one extra game. But it's the team's problem, not his problem. He pretty much threw it all off on the team. But the reason they're losing is not because of Kobe Bryant. Well, it's the team that's bad. But at the end of the day, let's just be honest. If Kobe Bryant was not the focal point of your offense, you would have a different team. The team could be constructed in a different way. The fact that Kobe's taking 14, 15 shots a game, you see what Tony Snow is doing to us, taking 7 shots a game and shooting like 30%.
That comment is one of the dumbest. It's one of the dumbest comments I've ever heard. Listen, Kobe Bryant has taken 180 shots in the NBA this year. 180. The only other player on the Lakers with 180 field goal attempts is Jordan Clarkson. The next guy in the team for attempts is D'Angelo Russell at 141. He's taken the vast majority of the shots, and he's shooting 31% and 19.5 from three. He's taken 77 three-point attempts. To me, you've taken 77 three-point attempts and shot them at a 19.5 percentage. Yeah. Any coach with balls would bench his ass and say, you know what, I appreciate everything you've done for us, but if you continue to shoot three-pointers at the rate you've been shooting, I can't have you out on the court because you are making us a horrible team. And it's a disaster. It's an absolute disaster, and I can't wait to see if he just says, you know what, I'm coming back next year. I just pray. I pray that happens because I cannot wait to see. The Laker fans deserve it. They absolutely deserve this. This is what they deserve. They criticize their management for everything they've done when they can't see the big picture here. The reason Lakers suck is because of Kobe Bryant, once and for all.
Yep.
You contrast that with what's happening with the Knicks, who, you know, put Phil Jackson in place to run things, and you bring in a guy like Porzingis. I mean, the reason they didn't even look at Porzingis was because of Kobe Bryant. I'm certain Porzingis wasn't even an option for them. I love D'Angelo Russell. I'm not saying he's not going to be a good player, but he clearly is not going to be as good as Porzingis. I mean, I've already seen that in a short time. What's that?
You don't think. I mean, who knows?
I don't think it's possible they can better than Porzingis. Have you seen this kid play? I mean,
I kind of said it too,
and I know it's a little too early. No, it's not too early. The guy's a 7-footer. He can do almost anything on that court. He can shoot the ball from almost anywhere. He's going to be a great player. Unless he has a major injury, it's impossible for Porzingis not to be at least an all-star, and his ceiling is much higher than Russell's because of the fact that he's 7 feet tall. That's just a period, end of story. He had 7 blocks in a game, Mark. 7 freaking blocks.
Knicks fans booed the pick. Knicks fans were all over Jackson for picking him. And look, his last season. It's just an aberration because you're switching things around and you've got a new regime. And the difference between the Knicks last year and the Knicks this year is incredible. And if this continues, if they can continue this ascent into becoming a better team, then Phil Jackson's done his job. Phil Jackson's a great GM if he's able to do that. Because you saw last year, I mean, you had injuries too. I mean, they obviously Carmelo Anthony was injured last year. And part of it was, I mean, they sucked with him too. But the difference between last year and this year, that's the difference. If a GM can fix things when things suck, that's the difference. The fact that the Lakers are in this, like, they're just sitting in la-la land and nothing's happening, you keep the same coach, you've got pretty much the same team coming back, you know, except a couple guys, you re-signed Bryant. You're right, though. I would love for Kobe to want to come back next year because what do the Lakers fucking do if he wants to come back? There's no way he's going to want to come back if he's playing like this. So I hope he turns it around just a little bit, just so that he wants to come back, and then what the fuck are the Lakers going to do? That last contract was his mercy contract. At that point, you knew that you were signing him at a point where he didn't deserve that kind of cash. What do you think now?
Yeah.
He wants to play? But there's no way Kobe's going to. There is no way. I'm going to give you 99.89% chance Kobe Bryant will not be in the NBA next year. There's no way. He's a competitor. He's not going to want to play like this.
Well, I think that's why he'll come back. If Jordan played till he was 41. That's all the guy lives for is comparing his career to Jordan's. And Jordan was putting up very good stats at the age of 40 and 41. Much better than what, I mean, it's not even comparable.
You can't compare them.
Yeah.
Jordan was still a very good player. The problem was that everybody compared him to Jordan of before, but he was still an efficient player for the most part. His shooting was still, he was averaging over 20 points a game each of those seasons. I believe his first season, he was shooting in the same range that he shot in for the majority of his career, which was in the mid to high fours. I believe his last season, I'm driving right now, I don't have the stats in front of me, but I do believe his last season he dropped, but I don't think he ever dropped. I don't think Jordan ever shot in the 30s, ever.
Many seasons
where he shot in the 30s. That's bad. That's really bad for a valiant score. Look at what that's doing to Houston. Same thing in Houston. You've got your best player shooting 20 freaking shots a game. He's shooting 37% for the year. That destroys you. It destroys you. It's happening on our team in lesser capacity. We'll get to that in a minute, but it's happening on the boat.
Well, let's get to the Bulls now. Enough. We'll come back to the NBA in a second. I mean, I want to see how you feel overall. Right now, let's the big picture. The Bulls right now are 9-4. Where the Cavs are 11-3, Bulls are tied with the Heat at 9-4, Pacers are 9-5. We got wins over the Cavs, we got wins over the Pacers, who are 9-5, surprisingly, a good team, fourth in the East.
That's real good. That's real good.
We got wins over the Thunder, you know, at various times, and I know everybody's been saying they've been winning ugly, and that's true. We've looked horrific at times. Still early in the year, still, you know, getting a hand. I think defensively we've been much better than expected. You look at the field goal percentage of the teams that we're playing. You know, regardless of what you say, we're much better than we expected to be defensively. And offensively, it's going to take a while, right? We still have 3 or 4 months to work out this offense. And I'm glad Gasol spoke up because I do feel that we haven't gone inside enough. And you saw a little bit of a change yesterday where the Bulls started utilizing him and Taj and Nico in recent games more in the post. But overall, I feel really good about this team. The Bulls are...
He didn't play well yesterday.
No, he had 14 rebounds. He had 12 points. He played fine. I'm tired of hearing all this. Every time something goes wrong, everybody wants to jump all over Gasol as the problem.
I'm not blaming Gasol. I'm just saying.
Let's not get off on this.
It didn't work, but go on. Yes.
It did work. They won the game. End of story.
They were up by like 16 points. They went to the final seconds because their offense is an X, but you go on.
Even if they didn't, they still won the game. Fact is, they're 6-2 in conference. Here's the Bulls' record: 6-2 in conference, 2-1 in division, 5-1 at home, 4-3 on the road. Overall, 9-4, not bad from where we were. We don't have Dunleavy. We've had injury with Brooks. Rose has been hurt. Big picture, how are you feeling about this team?
I gotta say, I'm shocked. Just when you see the statistics of where we excel and where we're faltering. It's a shock. I know you heard me talk about the first game of the season when the ball was moving freely, some of the games in the preseason when you saw what this offense could be when the ball's moving freely. What shocked me, I mean, our defense right now is much better than our defense was at any point last season. It's not even close. The people are one of the best defensive teams in the league. Again, a lot of that is Jimmy Butler. My gosh, you saw that against Golden State. That guy, we'll get to this in a minute, but, I mean, Jimmy Butler is, we're getting to the point where I'm about to say, all right, he is the best player on the team, and we need to start treating him like it just because it matters. But you need to have a hierarchy to some degree. But take that away. The fact that we're so good defensively and so poor offensively when our pacing is one of the best in the league. We're in, like, the top 7 for pacing, but we're in the lower 5 for actual points per game. And I attribute that 110% to a couple things. We can't move the ball that we want the way that we want to move the ball because you've got black holes on offense. You've got players that play a lot of minutes that are not a threat at all on offense, which gets it going back to the players that can score, which gets them trapped. And it gets guys like Jimmy. It gets guys like Kyle. It gets guys like Derek. It makes it tougher for them to do their job because guys like Nico, Tony Snell, I'm not going to say anything like Kirk Heinrich this year, man. He's been pretty damn good so far. I mean, really,
he has been good so far.
Has been horrible. I don't care how
he's been terrible
offensively. He's been so bad offensively that it kills you because he's not even freaking that good defensively.
Is he better than McDermott? Yeah, McDermott, by the way, had, I thought, overall, a very good game defensively yesterday. But Tony Snell's shooting 32% from the field. He's shooting 23% from, 43%, what's his three-point percentage here? 40% from three, which is not bad. So that I will give him 40% from three is acceptable. But he's wide open every shot. And, you know, 32% from the field is unacceptable. And yesterday, I don't know, there was a stretch there in the second half where he had about 3 wide-open threes, nobody within 5 feet. You won't see that in an NBA game. And he's just way too inconsistent to be considered a quality start. He shouldn't be starting. McDermott deserves to be starting. McDermott's shooting 50% from the field, 48% from three. The Bulls are top 5 in the league in three, almost entirely because of Doug McDermott. Also, Jimmy Butler shooting pretty well from three with a pretty large amount of attempts. Jimmy Butler shooting 40% from three, Mark, with 49 attempts is insane. McDermott's got 45 at 48.9. Those two guys alone are really keeping us in the top five in three-point percentage, which is a very important statistic in this league today. Give you an idea, the teams in the top 10 in three-point percentage, Indiana at number one at 41%, Golden State 2, Suns 3, Milwaukee 4. Milwaukee's the only team, I believe, let's keep on going, Chicago, Sacramento's not a good team, and they're in the top 10. But San Antonio, Atlanta, Cleveland, and Washington. So only two of the top 10 of the teams in the top 10 would not be in the playoffs with three-point percentage. So that's a very important statistic I love to look at, and field goal percentage overall. What are the top teams in field goal percentage? Number one, Golden State. Number two, San Antonio, Oklahoma City, Cleveland 4, Atlanta 5, Clippers 6, Washington 7, 8 Sacramento, 9 Charlotte, 10 Milwaukee. The Bulls need to improve in that statistic. Right now they're 23rd in the league in field goal percentage. So that needs to get better. But, you know, three-point percentage, because of Jimmy and because of McDermott, they're in the top, you know, five. And if McDermott keeps on improving defensively like he showed yesterday, he's got to be in the starting lineup. I'm tired of Snell.
Absolutely.
That's one thing I'd like to see change.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the biggest liability we have. Part of the problem, Fred, you know, field goal percentage is a huge indicator of wins. Three-point percentage, yes, it is if the team bases their offense on three-point field goals. Those teams that shoot the ball well from three that just aren't very good teams because they're not very good on, you know, inside, whatever. They got a couple good three-point shooters, whatever. The problem is the Bulls are in the top 10 in terms of three-point attempts per game. So the fact that they're in the lower part of the league in terms of field goal percentage, three-point field goal percentage, that's the problem.
No, you don't understand. They're top three. They're top five in three-point percentage.
Where would they be if they did not have Tony Snell jacking up three-four threes a game? Where would they be?
Nico. Now that you say it, that does probably affect the overall, with such a huge proportion of their shots taken from three, it does affect their field goal percentage, right? Because you're not going to shoot as well from overall if such a large percentage of your total shots are from the three-point line, you know, just because three-point shots tend to have a lower percentage. But in general, the NBA is layups and three-pointers. That's it. That's the goal to win. Minimize the mid-range jumpers, layups and three-pointers. You know, Derek is a guy who fortunately takes a lot of mid-range jumpers, and I really think he needs to get his game going for us to really – the number one thing for this season is – and I got into a couple arguments on, you know, with a couple of very smart people on Twitter who feel that, you know, the whole key to this season is Nikola Mirotić. I couldn't disagree more. If Nikola Mirotić is a bust, it doesn't matter for this season. What matters number one by far – is the interaction between Butler and Rose and how these two mesh together as A stars. And number one, Rose achieving or reclaiming his status as a all-star caliber player. That factor, Rose and Butler are far more important than Nico. Rose is 15 months older. I mean, Butler is only 15 months older than Nico. Why is everybody acting like Nico, you know, Nico who's struggling, you know, his improvement or his game is essential for us as a franchise who's going to challenge for a title. I don't agree with that. What say you on that? And what do you think of Nico so far this year? I'll give you.
Nico hasn't been very good. He's been very inconsistent. He has some games where he's okay, some games where he's not. His defense has been very suspect. Overall, he's been a pretty good rebounder. You know, I really thought it was telling last night when Jimmy got into that scuffle. Stacey said it right, man. When that scuffle started with Mason Plumlee last night, you saw a bunch of white jerseys in there sticking up for their guy. You didn't see a single red jersey. I'm not going to put Rose in that category if he should have been there, because he was on the other side of the floor. It was Nico that was standing right there, and it was Paul Gasol who should have shown a little bit of toughness, but especially Nico, because Nico was right there. Nico didn't do anything. And I think that is just a microcosm of his whole year. He's not very tough. And when he starts shooting the ball, he has a very consistent stroke. When he's nailing them, he's got a nice stroke, but then you'll see him followed up with like a line drive three that just, you know, he'll get an air ball. He does not have a consistent stroke, which I think leads to inconsistent play. I don't think his confidence is quite there. Do I agree with you that, yeah, if Nico is like this all year long, but Derek regains his form, then I think we're fine. And I think Derek, frankly, look, I thought Derek had a great game last night. I mean, he didn't shoot the ball great, but the fact is he's been gone for three games. He's still apparently shooting double. Whatever. I mean, I think Derek's been okay. I think that Derek's statistics are worse than the play that he's actually brought. But what did concern me, and it's not a huge concern because he just came back, but the games that Derek didn't play, Jimmy Butler really established himself as a dominant alpha dog player. I mean, that Golden State game, man, nobody played well besides Jimmy Butler. And Jimmy Butler, Paul was okay. But, I mean, it was really the Jimmy show. And the fact that players on Golden State were double-teaming Jimmy Butler, that everybody recognized that there were players that were never going to shoot the ball, and by the fourth quarter, it was really just Jimmy on our offense. And Jimmy was still able to get to the hoop. He was still able to make things happen. The ball needs to go through Jimmy, and then Jimmy can get Derek open. The problem that I saw last night was that Derek was continuously trying to create his own shots for himself, which he was making some great plays. He was getting, he was driving, kicking it out, making some great, he had that no-look pass to Nico, which I thought was a great play. But then you also saw in crunch time, he was trying to make things happen on his own, and you know, he'd get blocked near the rim. He was just completely missing the hoop. You certainly would like to see him kind of playing off Jimmy a little bit, because let Jimmy be the one that's drawing that attention, because that's just going to make Derek's game better. Jimmy can take the beating. Jimmy has shown time and time again he's a much bigger player. He's a much stronger player. He can get to the rim. He can play.
Yeah, I think he gets
three,
to the line.
The mid-range.
That's a big thing.
He can get to
he
the line.
He gets to the line. He was
exactly.
8-8 last night. He was 8-8 from the free throw line last night. I heard a steady. I think he's top five in the league in getting to the line. That's a huge advantage. And, you know, Jimmy
huge.
Is an A. The guy's phenomenal. I mean, there's no – this is – right now, he's the MVP of the team without a doubt. No one's played close to his caliber for the season. I mean, the guy's on both ends of the court. He's an absolute he's a superstar. He's an absolute superstar. And that's what's so exciting about this team, and I think we need to realize, is you could potentially have the best backcourt in the NBA if Rose gets back to all-star caliber play. I mean, everybody – Steph Curry alone probably says, yeah, that's the best backcourt just through his play. I still think the Bulls as a combo can approach that and really counter, you know, what's that backcourt that they have in Golden State, really be the Eastern version of that if Jimmy keeps on playing at this level. I mean, especially if he continues to shoot at a 40% rate from three. That's insane. Absolutely insane. Those two guys have to be playing in an all-star caliber for us to come out of the East. I think it can happen. Nico, back to Nico.
But they got to play well together, though. And my issue is that I do think that Jimmy is less aggressive when Rose is on the floor. Now, at the end of the game yesterday,
he might have a point there.
Jimmy, at the way end, Jimmy established himself. But there was this huge lull in the fourth quarter, man, with about, you know, between the six-minute mark and two-minute mark, when Derek tried to make every single play. And he was just getting nowhere with it. And God, thank God that the Portland Trailblazers shot so shitty, so it ended up working out. But it wouldn't have worked out it wouldn't have worked out if Portland was shooting the ball half decent. And I think that a lot of that comes down to Derek Rose. Derek really has to pick and choose his spot.
Yeah,
even when he gets his mojo back, which I think he will, he has to keep
I'm a Rose guy. You know I'm a Rose guy. You know I love Derek Rose.
Too,
I've always defended him. I've always defended him. We've been pro-Rose on the show, but the fact is 11 games, he's shooting 37% from the field, 17% from three. He's still shooting up threes. That's just not going to cut it, man. And he's not getting to the line. To give you an idea, Derrick Rose is averaging 2.8 free throw attempts a game. Jimmy Butler is averaging 7.2. So I don't know what it is, because I feel like Rose has been pretty aggressive for the most part when he has played in 11 games.
Yes.
He just needs to improve his play. He's just not – they both – Rose and Butler are both averaging 15.1 field goal attempts per game, the exact same number. The next two guys are Gasol at 13 and Mirotić at 9.9. You know, Rose is shooting a very poor percentage, and Mirotić is shooting a very poor percentage. Rose at 37.3, Mirotić at 37.2. Those two guys need to pick up their offensive game for this offense to realize – the greatness that is there, because it is there. You have tons of offensive talent on this team. When those guys pick it up, then we're really going to look like a challenger for at least the Eastern Conference representative, maybe even a title. So back to Mirotić, though. He's shooting 33.8% from three. I have liked that they've started to utilize him down low in the post a little bit more. I am a Nico fan. I just don't feel like he's God's gift to basketball like so many people in this, in the, even smart fans in this, in the city. Smart Bulls fans just really have him elevated to a level I don't see. I think he, you know, he's going to be a good player. I think he's a good player now, and I think he can really help a team win. But I do want to see him cut down on 28-footers. I don't understand that. I think his shot selection is still questionable. And, you know, I think he should defer a little bit more, frankly, in the fourth quarter to better players like Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose and even Gasol. He tries to take it on himself to just shoot it up. He has no fear, which is a good thing. But, you know, when he's not hitting, you know, it's just I thought the Golden State game, he was a travesty in the fourth. He's had several moments like that. And, you know, he's just got to pick it up, too. So maybe he's destined to be the inconsistent player that he is. You know, I saw on Twitter a guy was saying Nico's shooting 31%. That's really disappointing. Well, why would you expect him to shoot better? That's what he, exactly what he shot, 31% from three. It's exactly what he shot last year. So, I mean, it is disappointing, but don't act surprised. That's what he shot last year. So, you know, should be surprised if he's shooting better than that. He's up to 33.8 now, starting to shoot a little bit better from three. You really need to have him at around 35% or hopefully higher for him to max out, I think, on what he brings to the table. But I do want to see him more in the post more. I want to see Gasol more in the post. I think you have A-plus players, even Butler in the post. I think you have – Taj has always been a good post player. You have A-plus players in the post. And they don't do enough of that. Everything's been too perimeter-centric. Gasol touched on it the other day, and I completely agree with his comments. Move it down low a little bit. Punish teams for going small. One more comment about Noah. You know, Noah has been a complete train wreck for the vast majority of the season. But I have seen signs. Let me finish. Have seen signs recently. Mark, there's no debate, and he's been a train wreck. To give you an idea, I saw a stat from Nick Friedel. I think he had 39 or 38 shots up until the game against Portland. All those shots were within 8 feet, 8 feet or less, and he was shooting at 34% rate. I mean, that's a travesty. That's an embarrassment. Last night,
he's been pretty good defensively, though, man. I mean, he's been pretty good defensively.
No,
like last
not
year,
really.
I thought he sucked on
not
both ends
really.
Of the floor. Well, last night, I mean, he closed out
crap.
The game.
That's
he made
crap.
It with CJ McCollum. He didn't follow CJ McCollum on
no. Yeah. He's a good defensive player, but he's not anywhere near the elite level that he was to justify his horrific offensive play. He's got to bring more on the offensive end, period. Now, yesterday you saw that. He hit with tornado jumper at the free throw line. He shot 50% from the field. He did score some, but you can't have, you know, 0 points. He's had like five games of 0 points this year, you know, where
sure.
He's done nothing. So
he barely has any shot attempts. My issue is,
yeah,
I don't guess why don't we
player.
Play Bobby Portis a little bit more, because Joakim's not playing very well. Bobby Portis had a great preseason. He looks to be like a guy with a little bit of experience. He could be a good defensive player, but he's definitely a good offensive player. He has range, something that will work well in this system. So I just don't get it, because Thomas, say you just get to the conclusion that Noah's not your guy by the end of the year, which is very likely to be the case. The problem is that by that point, Bobby Portis is not going to have enough run to really be an effective player in the playoffs. I think Bobby Portis could be effective for us. You need more guys that can score. And I think that Bobby Portis potentially could take some of that burn off Nico, where Nico has to score for us a lot down low. If you have another post player that can also bring it, it's going to make you a smaller team. It's going to mean that Bogdan's going to be playing more center. But I don't get it, because I think that it's clear that you have a very talented player, an aggressive player that can become very good, but you're going to need to let him go through the bumps and bruises of the season. Now is the time to play him. If not 5 months from now, which God only knows. I mean, it looks like he's never going to get that chance, but I almost say,
not unless
if I was the Bulls right now, I would try to make a trade to see if I can just get another perimeter score. Not a great perimeter score.
Totally disagree.
Just a perimeter
totally
score.
Disagree. Hey, no. I completely disagree. This team is good enough to win the East. I have enough confidence in Noah coming back. I've seen enough where he looks a little bit more lively, a little more skip to a step, that by next spring he can be a contributing, dominant, not dominant, but a very good defensive player and kind of step into that role, what he's been doing as a nice active player off the bench. I love Portis. The only way Portis, though, is going to get an opportunity is if one of the other three guys get hurt. Entirely possible. So that's why I don't want to make any trades. I'm fine with this team as is. Who are you going to bring in that's going to be great perimeter score? You don't need any more perimeter scoring. You got Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose. You got Nico.
Dude, you do, man, because you don't have.
No, you don't.
We can't spread the floor without 3-point scoring. And the fact is that I'm not going to. Look.
We got McDermott.
Mike Dunleavy is having back.
I just told you we're top five in 3-point shooting. Why do we need more 3-point shooting?
But
no, we don't.
Concentrating in a guy that is a liability defensively on the floor. And in Jimmy Butler, who doesn't take a ton, it's not really his game. You need to be able to spread the floor a little bit more, I feel, than we currently do. Tony Snell is an atrocious NBA player, and Mike Dunleavy's not really a starter in this league. Also, Mike Dunleavy is having back problems. He very well could come back and not be the player that he was in the past. I don't want to bank on that, but I want to bank on the fact that Tony Snell needs to be replaced. I've seen enough Tony Snell to realize we need something. Because Jimmy Butler can play the three. You can move around the one and two guard spot a little bit too. Rose three playing the one, you plug in X perimeter player at the two guard spot while Jimmy plays
Mark,
the three. There's
Mark,
a lot of
Mark,
different things.
Who do you want? I'm going to name a player, and you got to tell me if you would throw him in for a trade for this quasi perimeter scorer that allegedly exists, 3-point shooter that some team is going to want. And in order for a team to let go of a 3-point quote unquote perimeter scorer, it's going to cost you an asset. All right. So I'm going to name a guy, and you tell me if you're willing to trade him. Jimmy Butler.
No.
Derrick Rose.
Are you talking about no? But it's the same thing. I'm not talking about getting an all-star caliber perimeter scorer.
No. Just name. You want a perimeter scorer? I want you to tell me who you want to trade.
I've had this thrown out to me before. Look.
Oh my God.
If you think that you have the talent here, where you could potentially, Gasol, probably not with Gasol, but maybe under the right circumstance, maybe.
I just shake my head. Gasol is a top five center in the NBA. You can go name a player, any center on these other teams. He is a rare player, extremely skilled offensively, who makes the offense work because he pulls out the center because he can hit out shots out to 18 feet. It is insane. And I know people don't appreciate it. Now I know people only focus on he doesn't come out and guard. Guy, there's not a lot of centers in the league that are going to hurt you from 18 feet. More often than not, he's a decent rim protector. Gasol makes you more likely to win than to lose. And it would be insanity to ruin your backcourt depth, your frontcourt depth, by trading Gasol. And in other words, you're not going to get anything back for him anyhow, because he's got a small contract and he's going to be a free agent at the end of this year. You might get something
again,
for him.
Right.
It's not going to be worth
really,
the trade. Mirotić.
Yes,
Mirotić.
I'm on your side. For the
Mirotić.
Most part, I'm understanding. Nico, maybe for the right deal, maybe because you have a lot of frontcourt depth. I'm not saying go get rid of. Look, I think that you could trade Joakim Noah. This is the last season on a contract. You can go find somebody that's got a couple years left on a shitty team where they want to be able to free up some cap space for this upcoming offseason where there's going to be a ton of free agents available. Could you go to a team like maybe a Philadelphia and get a guy like Nick Stauskas, who's one of the, who's shooting the crap out of things? He's putting a rope.
I wouldn't have touched that. That guy sucks. You think I'd trade Noah for Nick Stauskas? No way. Absolutely not. Why would you want to do that?
Because
you've got depth
in the front court. You've got depth in the front court. You can
not defensive depth. Then you're down to only one A-plus player in Taj Gibson as a defender in the front court. No,
Bobby,
I'm not.
He a very good defender in this league.
I don't
see,
know.
See, that's
about
what
that.
His MO was. His MO
not
was
now.
Defense. So he hasn't gotten a chance to play.
Oh my gosh! I wish we could just
we need
a
perimeter
fine
shooting.
With
that's
this
all
team.
I'm saying.
The realization, yeah, Dunleavy's going to be back. I'm talking about this year. I think this team could get.
But we don't know if Dunleavy's going to be. If Dunleavy's not the player that he was before, then you're screwed. So I would much rather have Dunleavy.
No, you're not. You have Doug McDermott. You have Doug McDermott shooting threes.
But if he was so good, why is he not starting playing all the time? Because he's not good defensively at all.
Yeah, but he's getting better. He's getting better. He looked. He played well defensively yesterday. I understand that he's. Hey, I understand. There's a few fans, bigger fans of Doug McDermott fans than me, and he has sucked at times this year defensively. Last night, he had several very solid plays defensively. Is he going to be all-world defender? No. No, but this idea that you can expect guys that bring something to the table to be just completely awesome in every aspect of the game is stupid. It's not going to happen. There's guys like Tony Allen that can't hit a shot outside of 5 feet, who are excellent defensively. There's guys like Doug McDermott, who are one of the best three-point shooters in the league, who's not great defensively. You got to balance it, right? And the way you balance it is, in some lineups, you have Noah out on the court and you have Gibson on the court who can clean up the mess that Doug McDermott and Aaron Brooks and all these guys that we have on the perimeter who are not A-plus defenders leave behind. So I am not for trading Noah or Gibson to bring in a scorer, especially of the ilk of Nick Stauskas, who I think sucks.
I'm just that was just a name. I'm just off the top of my head thinking somebody that's shitty on a team, especially the two-guard spot. We have no depth at the two. Jimmy can play the three. Jimmy was a three. Jimmy can play the two or the three. It's really the two-guard spot that I think is the issue. And if we could get another guy that can play. The problem is Doug McDermott's a small forward. That's it. Mike Dunleavy is a small forward. That's it. He cannot play the two. He's not fast enough. People still put him at the two, but he's going to be a liability at the two-guard spot. And we don't know if he's going to be okay. That's problems and careers. Bottom line. You do not see a lot of players start having back problems that keep them out for months, and then they come back and they're the same player. You see more guys like Steve Nash start having back problems, and that's the beginning of the end. Dunleavy is not a young guy anymore. He came out at the same time as Boozer. Came out at the same time as Jay Williams. So 2002, 3, somewhere in that range. I mean, Dunleavy's I have had it with Tony Snell. That's the issue. I don't think that he's ever going to be a good offensive player in this league. That's what we got him for. And I think that you need to go out and find somebody that can replace that spot. And if Dunleavy plays great, awesome. But McDermott's a two, Maris a three. He can back up Jimmy at the three-guard spot, and maybe he can play. You can move things around a little bit to give him some more minutes where Jimmy's playing two sometimes. I feel like you need another two guard. That's the issue. You need another two guard.
Well, I'd love to hear everybody's take on this. Email at us at chicagobullseye@gmail.com. Contact us on Twitter on CBE Fred, Chicago Bullseye Fred, CBE Fred, or Mark. Mark, I got hit the road, my man. We've already been doing this for 40 minutes, believe it or not. 45.
Well, I appreciate it. You got me from Milwaukee to Kenosha, so I appreciate that.
Sounds good, my man. Hey, happy Thanksgiving to you and the fam.
Happy
Thanksgiving to all the listeners, and thank you for downloading. God bless you guys, and God bless you too, Mark. Safe trips. Safe travels.
Thank you very much. Keep following us on Twitter, Bulls fans, and until next time, it ain't Bulls.
It ain't basketball.